So this will be like a supplement for what we just looked at with the sermon. So what in the world was I talking about today? Let's go through this verse by verse quickly so it won't be long and drawn out. He asked the first question, who's like the wise? Who knows the interpretation of the thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine. The hardness of his face is changed. Who is this? This is not you. This is someone else. This is a prophet of God. Why would he ask this question? It's because he's about ready to deal with the future. And a bunch of people are wanting prophets to come and tell them about the future, or to think that they are the people that are doing that. They can do that, but they're not. Who is like this? And his answer is none of you are. Okay, so you think that you're going to go around and be like Daniel and be able to solve the problems of the future and know when God's going to come back and all that kind of stuff? You think you're going to know that? You're not going to. So let's move into more practical matters. You see, this is the way I'm interpreting this. So what does he say? He gives you three things to think, to kind of way to behave in the presence of a king. Keep the king's command. He gives you a reason because of God's oath to him. We'll say that that reason is God put him there. All right, we'll go with that one. Second one, don't be hasty to go from his presence because he's powerful. He can do whatever he wants to you. Okay, don't take your stand in an evil cause because he can do whatever he pleases. You think it's going to be wise to commit a conspiracy or to not carry out what he said to do? Then you really need to think about what you're doing. Then he tells you more about the king. He is supreme. And who can say to him, what are you doing? But now here you have a weird ambiguity. Because the ambiguity is, who's the king? Is it the human king? Or maybe is it God the king? And what I want to say is, why does it have to be an either or there? Because which king are we supposed to obey? Well, both up to a point. But if you introduce the fact that God could also be in view here, like the Targum does, then all of a sudden you've got a hierarchy of who you obey. Okay, so now when you read back in verse 2, keep the king's command, you cannot turn this into an absolute thing. And I bring this up in the context of right now, what we're dealing with in our culture and civilization. And so many Christians that I have heard are saying, Romans 13, do whatever they tell you to do. Now, first of all, we should listen to Romans 13. So I said that to you, and you should be praying for those in authority over you so that it might be well with you. And I said that to you. We're not to just scoff at that and mock it. No, that's what we should want. We should want to obey them. We should want to pray for them so it will be well with us. However, if things get so bad that you don't know what to do, then all of a sudden, verse 5 comes in, all right? Whoever keeps the command will know no evil thing. So that's kind of the conclusion of his wise advice to, look, if you don't want to get into trouble, then do what they tell you to do. But then second half, and the wise heart will know the proper time and the just way. The proper time and the just way for what? For just obeying the king? No, I don't think that's what it's saying. This is introducing the fact that the king, this guy is not necessarily a good guy. And a wise person is going to know how you should respond justly to what the tyrannical king is doing. Do you see what I'm saying? Then we go to verses 6, 7, 8, and he starts talking about the future. Now, remember, I said verse 1 is about the future because this is prophets who have their faces shine because they can interpret the future. That word interpretation is dealing with a dream. Every other time it's used in the Bible. So now he returns to the future in verse 6. There's a time and a way, a time and judgment for everything, although man's trouble lies heavy on him. What is that talking about? Well, that is talking about the king has a way that he's basically going against God's way, and this causes the people that he is over to have troubled hearts. And then it kind of returns to some earlier Ecclesiastes themes. He does not know what's to be. Who can tell him how it will be? Who's the he? Well, it could be the person that the king is abusing. Well, he doesn't know the future, and we already know that. We've seen that in Ecclesiastes. But you know what? It could also be the king himself. He doesn't know what's going to be. Who can tell him what you think? He thinks he's smarter than you are. He thinks he knows the future. He doesn't. He's no better than anyone else because he's not the prophet of God in the first verse. Go to verse 8. No man has the power to retain the spirit or power over the day of his death. There's no discharge from war, nor will wickedness deliver those who are given to it. And the point here is, if we're talking about the king who's doing evil, this king's not going to save his life. He's going to die one day. There's nothing he can do about it. He's making war against God. He is committing wicked acts, thinking he's going to get away with it, or maybe he's going to extend his life, or whatever the case may be. And what this is saying, no, that's not the case. God is the one who has the power over the day of death. And when that day of death is coming, there is judgment. And this man cannot escape that judgment that's coming. Then he has a concluding verse. All this I observe while applying my heart to all that's done under the sun, when man had power over man to his hurt. So he has in mind, without question, some kind of an evil despotic king that, yeah, you should do what he says if you want it to go well with you. Here's my wise advice. But you're going to know the right way in the thing. So how can you, what's the best way to deal with this? Not to beg for some prophet to come and tell you the future, because who can be like that? Verse 1. Instead, it's to ground yourself in the fact that God is the judge of these evil people. He will do what's right, and therefore act according to wisdom in the times that you're living in with the despotic king. And not everyone is going to come to the same conclusion on that. Does that make sense? So I think that that kind of is hopefully a 5-minute summary of what I think Ecclesiastes is telling us to do. We can't turn this into an absolutist thing where you must obey the king, because look at verse 2, what it says. It's not what it's saying, but it sure is saying you better be wise about what you're going to do. You better count the cost. Okay? That's the wisdom of Ecclesiastes. This isn't the law code of Moses. All right, any comments or questions about that?
Well, you kind of saw it unfold in World War II. They plotted to assassinate Hitler. It wasn't his time to die yet. God had his time, and it was going wrong, but the people couldn't bear what was happening to them, so they tried to stand up for him, even though it didn't succeed at the time.
Yeah, they tried many times, and many of them were killed for it. And they counted the cost. They knew what was coming their way if they failed, and they failed more than once. It's a great example. So, you know, you can think whatever you want about what's going on in the world right now and the people that are over us and what they're doing. And all I'm just saying is use wisdom as you think about these things. And consider God as the judge, and he will take care of them. And that needs to be part of what you think about in the future and what your plans are. If you forget that, then, you know, then you turn into an unbeliever. And, well, the only hope left for judgment for these people is if we go and do it ourselves.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? But we're Christians, and we know that there is a future judgment that's coming, and these people will not get away with it. That's why I ended the way I did. You think God doesn't have eyes to see? He knows exactly what's going on. Better than you do. And some of us really like to think we know a lot about what's going on. He knows infinitely more than we do. All right? And he has it under control. So that's what I got to say about that. Hopefully that clears it up a little bit. Yeah, Ed?
I have this question. Where does righteous anger fit in this?
Well, that righteous anger would be in the second half of verse 5. The wise heart will know the proper time and the just way. If righteous anger needs to come to the surface in some sort of a meaningful way that doesn't obey the king, then it will come to the surface. Righteous anger. These people dealing with Hitler were righteously angry at what was going on, and that caused them to plot to kill him.
That also be like the prince that rescued Martin
Luther? Sure. I mean, all times are different. And Ecclesiastes is about learning what times you're living in and learning how to think wisely about them. So somebody asked me a question about the Sabbath earlier, and he goes, when you did the Sabbath a couple weeks ago, did you talk about what we should and shouldn't do on it? And I said, nope. Why not? Because I want you guys to be learning wisdom. You're smart. You can go read your Bible. You can see what God says to do and not do. And you can come to your own conclusions on the matter. What we can say that we all need to do is honor the Sabbath and keep it holy. And we all need to make sure that we are not forsaking the worship of God in public on the Lord's Day. And we all need to make sure that we are resting from our work. Now, how you do that and how I do that might look a little different. And so I can't sit there and tell you how to do that. Because what that does is that chops off your ability to think and be a wise person. My goal is to make you wise people who can think for yourselves. Because I believe you can do it. And you've all proven it the last 20 years. If you treat adults like adults, they can actually live like adults. Imagine that. You don't have to treat people like little kids and tell them what they have to do and don't can't do. Now, I say that on things that are indifferent. And we've talked about that, too, recently, right? This isn't don't murder. This isn't the Ten Commandments. I mean, it is the Ten Commandments in terms of you're not allowed to violate the Sabbath. But how do you do that? Well, there's nuances in all the commandments, right? Thou shalt not murder. Well, does that mean that we should never commit a coup against a tyrannical guy like Hitler? Wouldn't that be murder? Well, you got to learn wisdom and think through that question.